Welcome everybody to a new episode of HomeKit Insider. Today's episode is brought to you by Ring Around the Rosie. Do you like going in circles and songs that are vaguely scary? Ring Around the Rosie. Steven, how you doing, man? Are you a little dizzy over there?
Oh, I'm doing well. Yeah, that song's pretty creepy when you look up the origins, you know what I'm saying?
I know.
Yeah. We don't want to talk about that.
They're our sponsor. We should be nice to them.
You know, there was a big Apple event last week that we should probably talk a little bit about as well.
We should talk about it.
HomeKit made one slide. I saw the home icon in exactly one slide when the new Apple TV 4K was announced. And after all the rumors of different, like, oh, next Apple TV might have a screen or a camera, we got the A12 Bionic chip and Thread and a new remote. And that's the new Apple TV.
Okay. There is more to it than that, first of all.
Okay.
And second of all, there was no way that version of the Apple TV was coming at this event. Like, this is basically what I expected. The only thing that I didn't get that I expected here was, well, two things. One, Find My support on the Apple TV remote, the Siri remote. And I expected a new low-cost box or possibly a pluggable thing. But I guess pluggable would never work for Apple because it wouldn't be always on. They're always going to need always on power.
Right.
I guess just like a dongle-y fella isn't going to work for them. But otherwise, this is basically what I expected for an updated Apple TV. So yes, there is Thread support for all of us HomeKit homies out there.
Yep.
We also got HDMI 2.1, which is what enables high frame rate HDR video. Mm-hmm. So now we can do 60 frames per second, which is very nice for sports and everything like that. And they're working with like NBC and Fox Sports for enabling that high frame rate video for live sports games. So that'll be a nice feature for football or anything else when that actually fully launches and other people can support it. We also got Wi-Fi 6. That's a new thing here.
That's right.
Oh, and then some changes to AirPlay. AirPlay can now do Dolby Vision HDR over AirPlay, right?
Right, at 60 frames per second. So
yeah.
Because if you have a new iPhone 12, you can capture Dolby Vision HDR content 4K at 60 frames per second on your iPhone. And now if you AirPlay it to this new Apple TV 4K, it will play at the full resolution of 4K and the full frame rate at 60 frames per second. I guess previously it was downscaling it or downsampling it or something if you tried to AirPlay that to current model Apple TV. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, see, I like that. Those are some good changes. And people complained already about the A12 Bionic processor in there. I don't think people realize how powerful those processors are, even the A12 versus, I mean, what are they on now? They're only on like the A13, right?
They're on the A14.
Well, even at a two-year-old, I mean, the A10, like I never felt like my Apple TV was slow on the A10 processor that's in there. It's like A10X Fusion or something, or A10X, but I never felt like that was slow at all.
No.
Obviously, I needed a little bit more processing power for that Dolby Vision stuff, but it never like was a slouch on any of the Apple Arcade games, nothing like that. I mean, these things do a lot less than what your phone does with those processors, or what your iPad does with those processors.
Right.
So I have no problem at all with them putting an A12 in there.
So before we dive into the Siri remote, which was one of the bigger pieces of news with the Apple TV, they did also have this color calibration feature.
Yes.
Where you can hold up your iPhone, like screen to screen, to your television, and using your iPhone's cameras and sensors and the Apple TV magic, it will color calibrate the Apple TV. It's not going to color calibrate your TV. Like, it's not communicating with your TV's color settings, but it'll color calibrate the Apple TV, how it's being displayed, to make sure you have the best color on your TV. And honestly, I kind of like that feature because I don't like messing with all those settings a lot. And so this will automatically give you the best color possible.
Did you try it out yet?
I did not, because I'm not on the betas.
First off, it's an RC now. So it's not like a complete beta. This is the release candidate. This is what we're getting
this week,
when people are listening to this.
Right.
When it comes out, the RC is likely what we're getting, unless Apple drops an RC2 on us at the last second. But, you know, 14.5 for tvOS and iOS, all that is dropping this week as you're listening to it, and we'll get these features.
Right.
But I did try it out. I do have the RC on my Apple TV.
Okay.
It was very easy to do, super seamless. I originally could not figure out, why isn't this working? Why aren't you working? And I was like getting super annoyed. I'm like, wow, this is really sketchy for, you know, RC. And then I realized that my phone was somehow the one device that I had not moved to the RC. This is what happens at an Apple event, and I've got, you know, things going in 50 different directions, and I updated my iPad, but not my iPhone. So I quickly updated my iPhone, then went back to my TV, and like the second I hit it and brought my phone even anywhere near my Apple TV, the little card popped up for color calibration. You turn it around, there's a bunch of really nice, cool looking animations. Putting an inch from the display inside of this glowing box, you know, it flashes your green, blue, red, and a bunch of different shades of white and gray, and it shows you your color balanced Apple TV output, and you can go back and forth between the color balance and the original and see what they look like compared to one another, and then choose whatever you prefer. I liked the color balanced version, and you're good to go.
That's pretty cool. All right. Well, I'll definitely be trying it for the next episode as iOS 14.5 comes out. So let's talk about the Siri remote. It was long bemoaned, the old Siri remote, the flat black slab, didn't know which way was up or down, but now they've redesigned it. It's all aluminum. It has more buttons, believe it or not. And you have a five-way directional D-pad where you go up, down, left, right, and you can click down on it at the top for navigation, so you can click again in any direction. But it's also a touch surface, which I really like that they have both now, so you can touch and swipe on it. And I think one of the coolest things is to scrub in a TV show or movie or whatever on the Apple TV. You can actually go around in a circle on that D-pad like a jog wheel. Literally like old school iPod click wheels, and very cool. Plus dedicated power button, dedicated mute button to control your TV, like we talked about last week. And the Siri button has moved to the side of the remote. They said like your iPhone, so it's kind of in the same place. Honestly, I'm excited about the remote. Pretty cool. It's $59, and then you can get it separately because it's compatible with any Apple TV running tvOS. So the Apple TV 4K, the previous version, and the Apple TV HD that runs tvOS.
I am both very excited about this and also a little disappointed about it.
Oh, tell me.
Okay, well, one, I don't love the look of it. Like, I don't love the bright white silver. I kind of liked, the two-tone of the old one.
Yeah.
This looks a little dated to me because it looks like the one that preceded the Siri remote.
Yeah, that silver one with the
longer
black
ones with the ring. Yeah.
Yeah.
So to me, I don't love the white on black, basically.
Right.
I also didn't hate the old remote. Like, everyone really craps on the remote. I liked it. I liked it a lot. I had no problem finding the menu button, even in bed or anything at night in the dark, because you can just feel for that ring. So I just literally grabbed it, found the ring, and then swiveled it to however was correct in my hand and used it for memory there. So I really did like the other one, and we would drop this thing a lot. Like, we have dropped this thing. I have thrown it. Like, we shake a blanket, and it goes flying through the air, and somehow ours has never broke. Like, even though it's got a glass top on it, never broke. I know people with kids have reported, like, this gets smashed weekly, whatever. I don't know, but ours has been fine. So somehow our three in our house are, like, indestructible. So I like the old one. But I also was just wondering, like, I love the click wheel on this. I think that's really cool because you can swipe everywhere.
Right.
So you can swipe if you want to. You can do the ring if you want to. Click if you want to. I like that it has those options there. There's more buttons and everything switched position on me. So it's going to take some muscle memory to get things back. So, like, the menu button is gone, and now there's just a back button, which is effectively the same thing.
Right.
Then your play and pause button, like, moved up, and that Siri button moved to the side, and they added a mute button, which I think is really handy.
Yeah.
So, and I think it's neat that they added the full power off button on there too. So I think that was a considerate move, but I really feel like it was a missed opportunity to add the U1 chip and Find My support here. I mean, I said this on Twitter, like, who hasn't lost, like, a remote and a couch? Why wouldn't you want to just be able to say, like, Siri, where's my remote, and have the remote beep at you?
Right.
Like, that seems like it would be a natural thing for this remote. And I can pretty much guarantee that we are going to see Amazon flooded with silicone skins for this Apple TV remote that have a little spot in the back where you can slip an AirTag. I'm just saying, it's going to happen.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I was disappointed that there was no U1 chip. You know, the AirTags, or AirTag was also announced. I keep saying AirTags because we said that for literally a year, but Apple was like, no, it's AirTag.
I mean, it's AirTags when there are plural of them, but if we're referring to one AirTag, and I guess we always just refer to a whole bunch of them at once.
Right, because that's how many we're going to buy. But it is unfortunate that with the AirTag launch and the U1 and all that cool stuff, that the Siri remote was not part of that. But I do also agree with you, the look is not super aesthetically pleasing. It is more utilitarian. But after our conversation about universal remotes last week, the dedicated hardware buttons and HDMI 2.1, maybe this remote will serve the purpose of a universal remote for most people, and I'll have to try it out with mine. I'll be getting one. You can pre-order it April 30th, this new Apple TV 4K, and also the iPad and the iMac. All those pre-orders are April 30th, so you can race to get those. But AirTag, you could have pre-ordered this past Friday. They're actually for sale already. And I don't know, it's not really a home device, but you're probably going to attach them to your home type things. So I don't know, Andrew, were you excited to finally see AirTag launched?
I'm super excited about it. And I thought we might as well mention at least really quick. I know you went broke down all this stuff on the regular Apple Insider podcast, but mm-hmm. I was kind of wondering specifically with AirTags, like what we're going to see from, you know, a smart home or a shortcuts integration, if anything at all. I think that'll be really interesting to see what else we could do there. But I think AirTags are going to be extremely popular. I think the price point is very nice. $29 for one or a four pack for four. Apple on this personalization kick again. I mean, we got, you know, new colorful iMacs at the event. We got colorful iPad Airs and AirTags. You can, you know, personalize as you order them with all sorts of different emoji. There's like 31 different emoji plus text you can put on there. Mm-hmm. And then Apple already has a bunch of accessories out for AirTags. They have their own version, like a leather keychain, a leather loop, and a polyurethane loop. The Apple worked with Belkin on two different ones. There's a keychain one and one on just a little strap. And then there's the Hermes ones that are insanely expensive.
Hundreds of dollars.
Outside of all of those, then Nomad is out with a keychain one as well as a glasses strap. We've got Moment out with a bunch of different hard and soft mounts for this thing. So you can mount this to various, like, you could mount this to fabric or to camera equipment or a strap or like whatever else. They have a bunch of different mounts that you can use. We've got, who else was in there? I mean, we saw early leaks from Spigen and others, but the personalization here between picking, like, you know, what you want to put on it and then all these different accessories you can go with to customize it, complement it. I think that's really cool. I think these things are going to be wildly popular. There's a lot of neat features. Anyone can, you know, put them in a lost mode and any iPhone or Android device can read them via NFC. Yeah, there's a lot of really cool stuff. There's the precision tracking feature, precision finding feature.
Yes.
That uses the U1, gives you a heading and a distance and lets you find your devices that way. They're water resistant, user replaceable battery.
Yeah, I was super surprised with the user replaceable battery because if you've used Tiles like in the past, they've historically not had user replaceable batteries. You have to either ship it away and Tile will replace the battery, or they basically send you a new one, you send your old one back. So the fact that you can change the battery, Apple's saying it'll last about a year, then you change the battery on your own. I mean, love it. I love that. And they have this cool privacy thing where if you have an AirTag on your person that's not yours, let's say an AirTag accidentally dropped in your bag for whatever reason, after 3 days of it not being near the owner's devices, it will actually start pinging a sound to let you know that you have a rogue AirTag in your possession. And hopefully we'll stop carrying it, or I'm not sure what Apple expects you to do at that point. Maybe return it to an Apple store. But I thought that was an interesting privacy feature.
Well, you can always tap on it then. And if it's if it's actually supposed to be tracking you, if somebody's trying to stalk you, then it's probably not in lost mode.
Right.
And they're probably not going to do that. But so here's the questions that I had gotten on Twitter. So this is kind of listener question section now, apparently.
All right.
But here's the questions I got. So one was, wouldn't that enable somebody to track someone for like even a short period of time? So, you know, okay, so you said it's 3 days, right, is before the privacy feature kicks in. So you could essentially stalk somebody for 3 days without them knowing about it. And then someone's like, well, what happens if I just put my tag into lost mode? Would it not ping, or would not do that if in lost mode? So you could like slip into someone's bag and then put into lost mode, and then it wouldn't alert them because, I don't know, maybe the privacy features don't work when it's in lost mode. Like, there was a bunch of, like, I'm like, why is everyone so worried about stalking with these things? Like, there have been Bluetooth trackers on the market for 10 years or something. Like, we've had these things for so long.
Yeah.
I remember sitting in an old job and pre-ordering Tile off of, like, Kickstarter or Indiegogo or something, and I loved it. And since then, I bought, you know, a bunch more Tiles and Chipolos and all the other stuff like that. Like, they've flooded the market.
Yeah.
And yeah, most of them aren't user replaceable batteries. I knew Apple was going to do user replaceable because there's no way they'd be okay with putting out a product that was cheap and mass market like that, that essentially got thrown away or recycled without, you know, doing something. So the user replaceable battery makes sense, but I still don't get why people are talking about stalking so much.
I don't know. Cause I mean, if you want to be hyper creepy, I mean, you could have bought an Apple Watch with GPS and dropped that into somebody's bag, not much bigger than an AirTag, and that would have pinged GPS location too. So I don't know.
I'm just saying there's a lot of ways to stalk people. Like, this is not like the go-to way of stalking someone.
I also think it's interesting, you know, with the third-party announcements that came the week before this event, like the Chipolo tracker. I mean, you know, I signed up to be notified when Chipolo goes on sale, but now that AirTags are actually official, I don't think I'm going to buy the Chipolo. I mean, I guess it was nice they gave them a week of leads, you know, a week of people signing up for their email. But yeah, I'll be all about the AirTags. How many did you buy, we'll say, Andrew, when they went on sale?
Well, I started actually with a 4-pack, but we have a lot of things that I feel like I'm already going to have to be splitting hairs and choosing which devices I put them on.
Yeah.
I mean, Faith and I both have bikes. I feel like that's a good thing to kind of put on them in general. We don't usually leave our bikes unattended or anything like that, but if, you know, we have on the back of the car or something, we stop anywhere. I mean, I know these aren't really going to be an anti-theft device. It's not going to stop anyone from stealing your bike or anything, and it's just easier to lock them up. But I prefer to put them on there. I want to put them on, like, you know, slip them into camera bags, onto my camera strap, basic things like that, as well as my keys. So I'm trying not to buy Apple's entire stock on the first go around, but I did pick up 4 at least for this kind of initial drop.
Yeah, and it's 4 for $100, which is at a discount, as opposed to the 30 for one. So it's pretty cool. But anyway, AirTag, we'll talk about those once we get them in our possession and we'll review them. And so one of the other announcements, obviously all the iMac and iPad Pro stuff we talked about on the Apple Insider podcast Friday, but thought it was applicable to talk about podcasts just for a moment. And you've heard my thoughts on it if you listen to the Apple Insider podcast, but with this now lock-in that Apple has brought, Apple has never brought any kind of lock-in or exclusive content to Apple Podcast, and now they're basically giving podcast creators this tool to do subscription podcasts, exclusive content, ad-free episodes, whatever it may be, and they would be locked in. The listeners would then be locked into listening in the Apple Podcast app. And it remains to be seen the effect this will have on the industry. You know, I think there are pros and cons, but Andrew, what do you think about this?
I think it's neat. I think it's really cool that they're growing their podcast efforts, you know, as someone who helps make podcasts. But I'm so excited to announce that we are going to be a paid podcast going forward. We're going to be $20 a month. I think that's a great value.
Wow.
Stephen, what are you talking? We agreed on this beforehand.
Oh, I'm sorry. I missed that combo. Yes. $20 a week? No.
That's a month. It's a month. We will give $5 an episode. That is all we ask.
Right. Andrew's just kidding, listeners, in case you're really worried at this moment and you've gotten to a cold sweat.
Stephen, everyone's already left. Everyone's already unsubscribed and left because of that joke.
Oh, no. We have wonderful listeners, but I'd love to hear what the listeners think of this, too. Do people think they'll be subscribing to more because of its ease of use? You know, the stats on this podcast, actually, I'm going to look it up real quick. On the main Apple Insider podcast, 75% of listeners listen in the Apple Podcast app. So for 3/4 of the listeners, this feature will be available and they could subscribe right in the app, and the ease of use might actually encourage more people signing up for paid podcast services. For HomeKit Insider, it's actually a little bit different. 60%, so a little less than the Apple Insider podcast, 60% use the Apple Podcasts app. There's like 18% they use other. It could be web browser or even Android. And Overcast then is the next highest third party.
Even Android.
Yeah, that's right. And then Overcast is at 13% of our listeners. So 60% of our listeners, if something was offered in Apple Podcasts, could sign up. But for the rest of the 40%, they would not be able to. And so, you know, they would have to have a different option or not be able to access it. And I'm curious if Apple will release an Android version of their Apple Podcasts app now that they'll be offering this kind of content. Because we have Apple Music on Android already. And if it means more services income for Apple, I feel like they'll probably do that.
Great. We've got Apple Music over there. Apple TV Plus has been going to a bunch of different set-top boxes and streaming devices. We talked about Roku.
That's right.
Adding the Apple TV Plus button. I could see that. I don't know. I still think it's cool. Like, aside from just paid podcasts in general or exclusive ones like that, I like the idea of just doing more content. Like, there's a lot of different podcasts, like the ones that I usually have, like they have like the Stitcher Premium,
right,
where you have like the additional episodes and stuff like that. That's the part that I like, because it kind of incentivizes the podcast creators to do more. Like, it's rewarding them and putting out additional content. Right. And sometimes I feel like I bump up into a wall of, like, I don't have anything else to listen to, or I'm trying to find new ones, and I want more the people that I listen to. And I like that this is a way to kind of compensate them for that and say, I really do like your podcast and I want those extra episodes and stuff like that. So I think it's a cool idea. I mean, everyone else has had kind of a paid version of this for a while now, and Apple's kind of just kind of catching up.
All right. Well, as we're HomeKit Insider, let's hit some HomeKit news, because we did have some devices launched and updated and all that. First of all, VocoLink released or upgraded a new HomeKit lock. This is the VocoLink keyless entry deadbolt. It's $110. Right now, there's a $10 coupon. Amazon Prime, it ships pretty quickly. You can get it like in the next day or two, but it looks pretty nice. You know, it has a nice keypad. It's kind of like an antiqued bronze look, and has a keypad on the front, which is really nice if you want to give people a pin to unlock the door so they don't have to use their smart device or a key. You can do that. Plus, it's, of course, Apple HomeKit enabled, so that's pretty cool. And then Netatmo actually added HomeKit Secure Video to their outdoor camera with floodlight. This was, I think we actually talked about this outdoor camera a couple weeks ago, trying to figure out, you know, should you do Ethernet outside if you're doing security cameras? But the Netatmo outdoor camera, it has a big floodlight, you know, looks pretty cool, but it is now HomeKit Secure Video enabled. And so not just HomeKit Video, but HomeKit Secure Video mean those recordings can be stored in iCloud, and that's pretty cool. So we'll put a link in show notes to that as well. And this is actually pretty interesting. So Chip, this is the smart home alliance that was announced actually last year in 2020. This is between Apple, Amazon, Google, and it's the CHIP stands for Connected Home over IP, includes Zigbee in the alliance. The news is we should start seeing compatible devices from this alliance in late 2021. So late this year, we should start seeing devices with more compatibility across the different smart home services. And hopefully this will also mean more HomeKit devices, because makers who maybe just made devices for Google or Amazon in the past, they can now do it for all of these brands, and hopefully it will mean more HomeKit products. Well, next, mysteriously added to the note, something called the Belkin Stage. Andrew, tell me what that's about.
Steven, this is old news at this point. Well, it is by the time you guys are listening to this, because it came out on Thursday last week.
Okay.
And that is the new Wemo Stage Scene Controller from Belkin.
Oh.
And we did see this at CES, right? So this is not like an entirely new deal, but there's a lot of cool stuff here. So first up, Stage Scene Controller, it fits onto the wall. There's a wall plate and even like a wall plate adapter so it can fit on there really easily, and just mounts onto the wall and is magnetic, but you can also pull off the controller and use it as a handheld remote as well. So you have the option of mounting this on the wall as like an actual kind of like wall switch, or taking it with you and, you know, having it by the couch or bedside, anything like that. There are three buttons on that, with like 1 dot, 2 dot, and 3 dots, and you can press any of them down to trigger the scenes that accompany them. And it's actually a total of 6 scenes, because there's a long and a short press on each of those buttons. So it could be like an on versus an off. Mm-hmm. Or if you want to get fancy with conditionals and put, you know, if statements in there. Mm-hmm. So if the lights are off, turn them on. Or if the lights are on, turn them off. You could put in 12 scenes into this controller.
Nice.
Or more if you want to get really creative with that. But effectively, there are 3 buttons with 2 controls for each of those buttons. So 6 kind of supported scenes out of the box. It works via Bluetooth, but it will be getting an update to include Thread support.
Ooh.
So the rumors that were right said it had like a Thread radio inside, and sure enough, it does. So it seems like it's going to be launching with Bluetooth and then getting an update to control with Thread. Just use the normal battery, a CR2032 cell battery, to swap it out. And here's something that I like. Here's something that I think is really cool. So Wemo, I believe, is ditching their... I hope this is something that I can tell people. But Wemo is ditching their Wemo app. And they're moving into... like they're, especially for the HomeKit device, they're moving into the Home app, right? They're finding a new home. And they're following the footsteps of like Logitech with its secure... or with its...
like the Logitech Circle?
Yeah, the circle view and the circle view video doorbell, those all operate in the home. With those, there was never a way to do the updates manually. They just did the updates in the background, just pulled from Logitech servers and did those updates. I don't have like a, I don't have the technical details yet, and we're going to have to wait until we actually get this thing to test it out. But what I've been told is that users will receive a firmware update notification the same way that they get a notification now about a software update through the home app, and they can all do it inside the home app. So this sounds like Belkin or Wemo is the first company to support the in-the-home app firmware updates for HomeKit devices, which I think is exciting. Like, I was almost more excited about that because we saw someone actually taking advantage of this, and you can do firmware updates through Home versus having to download a third-party app to do it. I like that. I think that is really cool. It makes sense that it's a manual process here, or at least somewhat manual, because it is like a battery-powered device and not like a Wi-Fi connected device like the cameras are, but it might be out by the time you guys are listening to this, so just check the show notes for the article and clear up any confusion.
That's very cool. Belkin Stage. Now, last week, we had talked about the SmartMe P1 air purifier and how it's now, I think, the third HomeKit air purifier we have. And you have some stuff here, Andrew, so tell me more about the SmartMe P1.
Yeah, so just some really minor changes. This thing is really, I mean, it's a cool air purifier, and it's pretty affordable compared to the other air purifiers that on the market that work with HomeKit. It boasts, it's really fast. It can boast that it can clean a 180 square foot room in only 10 minutes and a 320 square foot room in 20 minutes, which is ridiculously quick. So these guys are listed at $180. But for launch, SmartMe is offering $40 off using the code that we've got in the show notes from April 22nd to May 2nd. What happened, why I'm talking about this again, is because they seem to have stumbled out of the gate and there was an issue with like the Amazon listing and it never went live and it never showed up.
Oh, okay.
So it was technically supposed to have launched, you know, when we talked about this last week, and you know, the news was out there and everything, but the device was not available to purchase. So they've reset. It is relaunching and launched. It relaunched, you know, previous Thursday. Now you can use that promo code to get $40 off. So $180 brings it to $140 HomeKit air purifier.
That's pretty cool.
I think this is going to be pretty darn popular because we had a lot of input on the Vocalink, PureFlow, and even the Molecule ones of how expensive they are.
Yeah, for sure. It's a great deal. We'll put a link in show notes to the SmartMe P1. The coupon code is CleanAir40, and you'll see that in the show notes as well. Now, in the misting purifier space, the, I guess those aren't really connected, but it has to do with air and air molecules. You said you have
air,
You have a personal project here, the MistFlow Mini. Why don't you talk to me about it?
Yeah, so I've had this for a little while now, and the review finally went up on Apple Insider. So again, in show notes, people. But I've been using the Vocalink, the MistFlow. Yep. It's a humidifier. This is the only HomeKit humidifier that I know of, I say with caution. And essentially, it feels like a grown-up, bigger version of the Flower Bud, which is still one of like the most talked about like smart home devices in my house because it looks so funky.
Yeah.
With its like, you know, curved nose or something on the top. But the MistFlow, its biggest thing is the fact that it, I mean, it's so much larger and it actually is designed as a humidifier kind of first and foremost. I think the Flower Bud, this is just my thought is that the original one came out like the Flower Bud and they talked about, oh, it could also humidify your house, but it could not do it very well. But they kind of just mentioned it offhandedly. And then a lot of people were like, oh, it's a humidifier. And it got really, I mean, that's also how they got it through HomeKit, because they were saying that it was a like a diffuser, like an oil diffuser, but there's no setting in HomeKit for an oil diffuser. So they're like, it's a humidifier, which is technically accurate, but it was very limited. Like we put it on our nightstand, it would maybe help us like on our side of the bed, but it really wouldn't humidify a room. So this one is actually designed to humidify a room. It has a 2.5 liter water tank with an antibacterial layer on the inside, and it adds that clean, cool, dry moisture to dry air. And they say it's rated for rooms up to 430 square feet. It looks very simple. It looks more like a standard kind of humidifier. It's kind of like a cylinder going up, and there's a little water droplet icon kind of on the top that's cut out, and that's where the water or the moisture comes out of when it is running. It has a 30-hour runtime. So if you filled this thing up to the max and then let it run, it would run for 30 hours. So if you had this on a schedule to maybe just run at night in a bedroom or anything like that, you could get by with kind of refilling this once every 3 days. It's also super quiet. We had no problems with the noise or anything keeping us up. As far as HomeKit is concerned, it shows up in the Home app, and there are two devices in the Home app from the humidifier. There is the humidifier itself, which you can control from like zero. You can turn it on or off and then choose how much. There's like a slider, like 0 to 100, but there's technically 5 levels of output for this. And then there's the mood light that is on the inside. So the bottom has a light in it and actually lights up the water tank, which gives it a really cool like diffused light effect. And it's got all the colors. I mean, it's got the full color spectrum. So blue, green, red, purple, pink, teal, whatever you want to choose it as, just plain white, anything like that. So it's really good, kind of like a nighttime light, especially for kids or anything. Turn this on, turn the humidifier on, and then over time have it turn off. So turn off the nightlight or lower the nightlight over time. Schedule the humidifier to come on when you're in the bedroom, turn off when you leave the house, anything like that. But so far it's worked really well for my wife and I. It's been a really kind of just, it looks really nice on the counter versus some of the other ones that we've seen out there. It's been reliable and solid. We haven't had any issues with it turning on or off. There are physical controls. There are 2 touch sensitive buttons that you can use to control the lights as well as the humidity level. You do firmware updates through the Vocalink app. It does detect when it's out of water, so it automatically stops for you. You can choose your target humidity. So I can see in the room, like right now, my current humidity is 40%, and you can set your target humidity. And when it gets to that target humidity, it will stop.
All right.
But I don't think you see that humidity in the Home app. I don't think you do. Basically, you just get your output volume, because I'm only seeing the 2 sensors here. And then again, yeah, there are 5 different mist output volumes. Vocalink lets you set a countdown timer, like a sleep timer, essentially. So you can do that too, which is different than a schedule. So if you'd prefer to do that, but it's not through HomeKit, so it's a little bit different. Yeah, I don't see the actual humidity level reported in the Home app. So that is one thing that I feel like this is missing and could be added. One other minor thing, do not overfill the water on this. If you fill the water too high, it blocks it and it can't actually output the water. And I ended up like melting the top of mine.
Oh my.
So you don't want to overfill this with water. There's a line and you should follow that line.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's pretty cool though. We'll put a link in the show notes. This is the Vocalink Mist Flow. And you are right. I did a little cursory research. It is pretty much the only HomeKit humidifier for sure. It's pretty cool. So let's hit just a few listener questions here in the last couple minutes. We had a listener, as per normal, corrected us on our pronunciation, Siobhan.
Siobhan is actually the person who did the Jaguar.
Oh.
That's their blog, The Practical Home Kit.
Oh.
So they did the Jaguar, and so they have a bunch of other really cool tips on their blog. So they were reaching out about adding other HomeKit stuff to the Denon. And they're specifically talking about Denon here. So I don't know. I mean, I'm pretty sure I thought there was, like, they say there is a specific receiver category.
Yeah.
That will act like a TV in HomeKit. So Denon, it seems, is limited right now to just AirPlay 2, but there are probably others. There are others that support the full receiver category with input switching.
Thank you, Siobhan. And her blog will be in the show notes once again, so you can check out all of her cool tips and stuff. I've had people asking me on Twitter about Eve Energy. I guess it is still pending release here in the United States. Do you have any info on that?
No info, guys. I reached out to Eve, and they said they'd update us when they have something to announce, but it missed that delivery window. So no Eve Energy with Thread at the moment. Still waiting.
Gotcha. Okay, well, this question comes from Troy. He emailed me asking about, is there a way to pause notifications on HomeKit cameras? Because he has kids, and when they play outside, it results in many, many notifications. And I told him there's not really a pause button, but what you can do is really granularly control when you will be notified of motion. So some of the options are, you know, notify me when I am home, when there is someone home, or only notify me when there is no one home. And then you can also set time of day notifications. So if you just want to receive notifications maybe at night, maybe 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. or something like that, you can set those timestamps so it won't notify you outside that window. So you'd really have to get in there and see if you can adjust the controls to really get the amount of notifications you're hoping for. But there's not just a blanket pause notifications, except for like do not disturb on your entire phone.
I think the easiest solution here is just getting rid of the kids.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if he kept the receipt. That's the problem.
I have a less optimistic answer, and not just the kid one, but I have a similar problem with my cameras, and I actually have it set to, even while I'm home, alert me if there is a person in the backyard.
Right.
Because even if I am home, if I'm in the studio recording or if we're upstairs or something like that, if there is a person skulking around the backyard, I would prefer to be notified about that. Yeah, so if Steve has his set up to alert him if there are people, you know, in the backyard or something, the kid is still going to set it off. So there isn't a way. We have talked that we want more granular control over cameras, not like we wouldn't be able to, you know, switch modes via shortcuts. And I think that would be the solution that isn't here yet. If Apple does allow you to change like that mode. So right now the modes are just purely based on when you're home or away. Like when you're home, do this, when you're away, do this. We need something where we can just be like, okay, with this scene, switch it to this mode and switch to this mode. So that way you could have like a kids or outdoor thing or, you know, disarm the camera scene and it would do that. And then you don't have to deal with those notifications. But otherwise you're going to have to go in and manually turn off those cameras. Like you have to literally go into the settings and say, when home, just stream.
Yeah.
Or, you know, whatever the setting is that you need to change for notifications. But that's what you have to do. And it is annoying.
All right. Well, this final question, this comes from Daniel. He's outside of the U.S. and he was saying that a lot of HomeKit light switches are just for the U.S. market. And in Europe, there's a couple like Eve, but they're usually more expensive. And so he's asking if we have any recommendations for these different brands that are available in Europe.
Well, not even Europe, but he's even specifically in the UK,
right,
which I think is even more limiting. I think William said that like the new Eve one that launched that supports Thread. Also, I forgot about that. Eve launched a new light switch in the in Europe, in the EU, that supports Thread. So
okay,
that's in there. Added it, got it, didn't miss it. But that's in the EU and not even the UK due to some Brexit shenanigans. So in the UK specifically, there's even less of an option and they all require those neutral wires.
Right. Well, honestly, I do not have experience with the brands that Daniel was mentioning here, the Sonoff, Maris, we know the brand, but I don't have experience with their smart Wi-Fi switch for the UK and the Shelly, so I am not sure about that. I guess, does Lutron not make stuff for the UK? That would be my question.
Does Lutron require a neutral wire?
No, it does not. That's why I have them all over my house.
Okay.
Let's see. Daniel, see if Lutron is available where you live. Maybe you need to smuggle it through the English Channel. I'm not exactly sure. But Lutron is the one that I always go to because they have several options that don't require a neutral wire. You do need a hub, but it is HomeKit enabled. So I don't know if that's an option for you, but as far as the other brands go, I'm sorry, I do not have experience with those.
I have nothing for Daniel. I do not know enough about what is available in the UK versus the EU versus even here in the US. And
right,
without digging into each one, I'm not even sure which ones require the neutral wire and stuff. Cause I've always had a neutral wire, so I haven't had this issue. So I have never done, you know, a ton of research on what the available options are, but there's a lot of light switches and it's really unfortunate that somewhere like the UK is that limited and their HomeKit switch options. I mean, the HomeKit's not new at this point. How is that still a thing?
Right. Well, this is when we turn to you, the listener. Apparently, I'm looking at our metrics right now, about 9% of our listeners are in the United Kingdom. There is a good number of you over there. So reach out to Andrew and myself on Twitter. Our Twitter handles are in the show notes. Let us know if you have any luck with HomeKit light switches over there in the UK. What is the brand you prefer? And do you know which brands do not require that neutral wire specifically over there in the UK? And then for everyone else, let us know what you thought of the Apple event, the Apple TV Siri remote, AirTag, all that good stuff. You can tweet at us again. That's in the show notes. You can email us there. And don't forget to check out the other podcast Apple Insider has, Apple Insider Daily, and the Apple Insider Podcast every Friday. And if you would, take a moment and give us a 5-star rating and review in Apple Podcasts. We would greatly appreciate it. Thanks for tuning in. We'll catch you next time.